out there, and I was just welcoming everyone to be here, and my name is Frank Sturdy. Anyways, thank you for indulging me in that. I'm practicing my language now, 50 years old, finally learning to speak my dad's traditional language. So, yes, I came today to be part of the meeting, thanks to Stan and folks that asked me to come. And I thought about it for a while, like, why do we need alternative media? And for me, it's multiple things, of course, right? I think the mainstream news a lot because they do reach the masses, right? ABC, NBC, CBS, all these folks that I can speak particularly of the cases in Antioch right now, if you're all following the Antioch police. You know, they're out there, and they're bringing to the masses the story. But we all know how, you know, we get the press like that. They're usually short stories on the news. You'll get a sound bite from activists, the official story from the cops, some B-roll of City Hall, a couple police car B-rolls, and then the story's over in about 2 minutes. So for me, I feel like being part of independent media, KPFA, I've been able to do extended audio for folks. Again, using the recent stories of Antioch and the police, which I'm deeply involved in, is being able to share the stories of folks that have survived the brutality or lost loved ones and hear their whole story. And just being able to, of course, listen, empathize, and not just get the sound bite. So, of course, that's important for me. And also, I think moving into, I've been a radio person. Real quick, I guess, about my history before I go any further. I came into media through the KPFA First Voice Apprenticeship Program, which is about a, it's sad to me because it recently the funding got cut for it, but I think it's about 40 years old before it got cut. And that was a training program brought to KPFA because even KPFA are one of our bastions of independent media and equity, diversity, equity, inclusion. Wasn't always quite diverse and equitable. And so folks had a sit-in at KPFA, and they sat in the production room and wouldn't leave until they developed a program that let women and people of color into the station and taught them basic foundational skills in radio, editing, that time it was cutting tape, mixing, on-air hosting, and then, of course, engineering, learning how to use the controls at the radio station. So we got ground-level skills in all of radio, including, I left out, going out with handheld recorders into the community and recording, you know, live events such that I'm speaking about. So that's how I got into KPFA. That was 2005, and I graduated the program in 2007. And then at that time, the apprenticeship program was flourishing and thriving, and they had a fellowship program. And I became a fellow, a one-year fellowship, the technical director. And I've been there ever since. And what happened was KPFA went through some hard times previously to these hard times. I think I don't need to cry the woes of KPFA's financial hard times. But in 2009, they started making cuts to programs and Hard Knock Radio, Flashpoints, other shows of KPFA. Flashpoints lost North Arrow Friedman, the producer about Israel and Palestine. You know, that's blowing up right now. Literally. And the apprenticeship program also was severely cut back then. And they also initiated a hiring freeze. So when the fellows dropped off, they wouldn't let us hire a new fellow. So kind of slowly drained us. But we continued on until last year, 2022. At the end of the year, they cut funding for the apprenticeship program. And sad day, very sad day, but they let us keep our hour, which is Full Circle. Thanks for the introduction. Full Circle airs Friday nights at 7 p.m. And without the training program, I feel like it's fallen on me to be the producer of Full Circle since the pandemic actually kicked in when we lost touch with folks. So back to my independent media story and why it's important, but that's how I got into KPFA and radio. But what I was moving into before I told my story was that going through all those years, we saw as radio and media in general morphed into, no matter what you're doing, if you're doing print, if you're doing radio, it's all multimedia these days. So we started doing some streaming, video streaming from the KPFA studios, Facebook streaming. It didn't really pick up at KPFA. We had a lot of battles with KPFA about that. But I think that's another super independent source that I appreciate is this live streaming or even videos, but live streaming especially, where you feel like you're there and you're watching. So important independent media to me is like on the internet live streaming events as they happen, so you could watch them and be there. And I experienced the other day, I don't know if you all been following the Cop Campus, San Pablo, anybody? Yes. Cop Campus, $43 million police training facility coming to San Pablo. No, this is the San Pablo one, West Coast. Yeah, coming here. Anyway, so I was out there and I was ready to live stream that, but they didn't want their faces shown, so nobody wanted me to live stream, and I was totally disappointed because a lot of people were caught off guard about that. And being an organizer and a protester and a media person, I feel like I'm kind of in a gray zone where the people I meet in the mainstream, I get to let them know on the inside about our actions, and I try to get them to come. And I, as a lot of you, learned about the Cop Campus thing in the last minute, and I happened to make it out there. None of the mainstream press was going to come. And I was going to stream whatever I could, and they would take the clips off there. But they didn't want no live streaming, so what I just had to cover my camera and stream the audio. But I still got the audio up there, and I did do an interview with a guy in his boots. Hey, made it on Democracy Now! This is my first video on Democracy Now! With everybody saw it. The boots. Hey. I just call it Boots now because that was like my one video that made it to that. Anyway, so that's another important aspect I feel for independent media is the live streamers, Unicorn Riot, First Voice Media, anybody that can bring you to the scene and you can watch what's developing. And most of the time, you can grab from that and credit them. I want mainstream media or other folks to take my videos and use them, you know. So I hope that that happens. And what else about independent media? I think alternative independent media, I think it's the same old things, right? We just don't get the story from the regular mainstream press all the time, unless we get somebody that particularly picks up a story at the mainstream media, the Times, the Contra Costa County Times or something. Folks that follow the police accountability will sometimes, you know, get a good write-up or something like that. But I think just having alternative sources that can go beyond, like I mentioned in the local ABC, Channel 7 News, all those, where you get the short story, we get to share and elaborate. A lot of things that I do personally are streaming the entire press conference, so I'll just, you know, you won't, again, in the regular press, you might get a clip of the press conference here, you could, of course, hear the entire press conference and the Q&A if possible, and then try to follow up with interviews with the family, and post the entire thing. So I'll probably wrap it up there before I'm in danger of repeating myself. I think I can close out on that it's been very important to me in these recent times because at KPFA when I was part of the training program, I was more of like a training director and someone that did occasional stories. And then when the pandemic hit and basically everybody's life changed, all of our apprentices that were in training drifted away but one. And we had to immediately move to at-home training. Nobody could go to KPFA right down the street anymore. So we lost everybody but one. And that kind of forced me into like weekly production. Although I had to oversee their production, now I was responsible for the content. So I took it a little bit more, I don't want to say seriously, that I took their content seriously, but at that time I was facilitating their thoughts and their stories that they thought was important. And I think I could also add that what was important about the first Boys Apprenticeship Program is that we took folks that just wanted to learn media, that had no skills. We brought them straight from their community to the station at KPFA and taught them these skills. And the only ask that we had was that they would return to their community and tell the stories that they thought were important that would better their community. And I think KPFA is going to miss that. They might not feel it as much, but I think they neglected the program for a long time. It could have took people that went on to NPR, KQED. I'm thinking of Chung Jin Lee, people at KALW, Jen Chien, folks that moved east, like they do the PBS NewsHour. I can't think of her name right now. Anyway, we lost all these folks, and I feel like these were gems that KPFA could have held on to. So their new training program that they will have will probably provide people to fill positions in the station, but they won't be telling their community stories. So again, lastly, I think I just would close on that, and what I was about to say before I drifted there was that the independent media to me has been real important in these last years and months as the police development in Antioch has come to light with their text messages, because another little backstory to mine, was that I was attacked by the Antioch police in 2009 and severely beaten, hospitalized, and taken to jail, and tortured at the jail by the Martinez detention facility deputies. Anyways, I went through a long court battle to prove my innocence, and videotape surfaced that was missing. It surfaced in about 2011 or 12, and my case wrapped up upon the view of that tape when the judge determined that their story just didn't match the video. So since that time, I have protested the police in Antioch, calling out the officers, in particular Rick Hoffman, who choked me unconscious, beat me with his flashlight, kicked me in the face when I was laying on the ground, and called me a faggot, and all kinds of other stuff that I talked about publicly in the city hall and, to the city council, naming these officers for over a decade until these text messages recently came out. And what happened in the end was you got to see those text messages yourself. And who was sitting at the top of the heap, you might want to say, as the Antioch, the APOA, the Antioch Police Officers Association president, was no other than, yay, Rick Hoffman, the guy that 10 years ago kicked me in the face and beat me with his flashlights, who I've been talking about to the city council for all these years. But now that this all has come to light, I feel like the independent media, particularly KPFA, but also KALW, NPR, I believe PBS, they've been covering the Antioch police story. But again, it's the independent people within those organizations, and that will say, can you cover that if they have that authority, or the person themselves that can say, hey, I'm heading out to the rally in Antioch, right? So I think that's why it's important to be the alternative, so that you can say, I'm going here, I'm going to cover this story, and not be stopped, and be able to bring, even in your case, if it's just a soundbite, at least you're there telling the story, but in the alternative form. Speaking of me particularly, is that I'd like to let the tape roll. I'd like to get the entire event so that you can just be a part of it. And before I sign off, I will just say, if you haven't already, go to First Voice Media on Facebook, and that's where we post every show that we do every week, and that's where we also stream our live videos. The most recent video was in Antioch just Thursday of the signing ceremony of anti-harassment protection to pretendants in Antioch that ACE Action has been fighting for 2 years. So I don't even, there was no other press there, no mainstream press that day. So the entire ceremony is up on First Voice Media. And I'm sure some of you are familiar with ACE Action, Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. And they fight for these housing rights. So you get to hear directly from them and other organizations in Antioch, in their full words, Rising Juntos, Monument Impact and Concord, and they all got to speak. And I was there with them for these 2 years, streaming their rallies, marching with them from the corner Lowe's into their apartment buildings as they surrounded the manager's office and were threatened by armed police. I was in their face with the camera and the microphone, letting them tell their stories. So that's where I'll wrap up on. Please check out First Voice Media on Facebook. And if you can, tune in to Full Circle Friday nights at 7 p.m. on KPFA 94.1 FM, or of course kpfa.org worldwide. Lastly, as KPFA apprentice.org, and that's because KPFA for some reason kills our archives after 2 weeks. So for about 10 years now, we've archived our own shows at kpfaapprentice.org. So go there, and we always include links to background material if you can, organizations that we cover, directions to action that we talk about if it's going to happen within the next few days. So, kpfaapprentice.org and First Voice Media on Facebook. And thank you all for listening to me.
All right. Thank you, Frank Sterling. All right. So, our next speaker is Ken Epstein, and he's the education editor for the Oakland Post. He was formerly a communications director for the Oakland Education Association and also probably a retired high school teacher, right? Yeah, I like that. Okay, so here's Ken.
Let's see. Where should I hold this? Like down here? Is this a little higher? Is this better? Okay, anyway, hi, I'm Ken Epstein. I'm a retired Oakland teacher, and currently I'm a reporter, and I was editor, but a reporter at the Oakland Post newspaper, mostly working from home now, but still out and about in the community. And Oakland Post is the largest African-American newspaper outlet in the Bay Area. Is our Spanish language newspaper, and then there's the Oakland Post, and the Berkeley Post, and Richmond, and Stockton, Vallejo, Marin City, San Francisco. So it's around the Bay Area, yes. And it's free. So it's pretty widely read in the community, probably more widely read than the Chronicle, which probably, I think probably people subscribe to in the Oakland Hills. My background also includes that goes back. I was dismissed from UC Berkeley for leadership and activism in SDS, against working against the war and against racism at the UC Berkeley campus. One of my first political activities was getting arrested in the free speech movement in 1964, which. A lot of people think of it as totally a free speech fight, but it was also an anti-racist fight. And actually, fundamentally, an anti-racist fight because they were trying to suppress the student movement because so many people were going to the South. And organizing very huge core demonstrations, Congress of Racial Equality had demonstrations every Friday and Saturday night at Jack London Square, demanding that they hire black employees at the front of the restaurants, not just working in the kitchen and washing dishes. I'm not going to go into all that. That's an interesting history that probably still needs to be told. Today I guess I start off saying what I I think I'm going to talk more about the context of why we do need independent media and the role of the mass media in working to help suppress our struggles. So I'm not going to talk about the bigger picture, which you're probably aware of, is the media's connection to the national Republican right-wing push to create an authoritarian regime in the U.S. and the Democrats' support for war internationally and violence and oppression against people of the United States through the increased militarization of police, which is connected to the growth of these top cities. But what I'm going to focus really on is what I know about, which is the local struggles and the media smears that often don't get covered or discussed. I guess one thing I just watched recently, which I think I'd recommend if you haven't watched it already, is I'm a Virgo, which is it's a little strange. It's sort of a satirical TV series that's on Amazon, but it's made by Boots Riley, and so he's a very left-wing singer, artist, rapper, and it deals with one of the parts, I think part of I'm a Virgo that Boots made, I think there's like 7 episodes so far, and they're going to make another series next year. And it has a big impact, and a big section of it is about how the media distorts and encourages the vilification and demonization of people. So one of the first points, and maybe controversial, but I think that part of the reason we're under attack locally is for the small steps forward that we've made. And we're sort of in a new period, I think, that calls for stronger organizations, more unity, and better communication. So, like, the progressives won in November, locally in Oakland and in Alameda County. So we now have a mildly progressive mayor and city council in Oakland. We probably now have the most solid progressive in the country as a district attorney in Alameda County. She is a victim of the system, so she's a powerful voice. She say that, you know, that for all the vilification, they don't talk about her. She was a foster child, and she was jailed when she was a teenager, and she was facing a life of being locked up herself, and yet she managed to overcome it with support from several foster parents, and she went to Yale on a scholarship and became a lawyer. And so, anyway, she's very strong, but she's under a lot of attack. So the progressives also won significant advances on the school board, tried to stop the closing of schools, which is being pushed by the state, and which the Chronicle sees as a necessary step because they don't think Oakland can afford schools. So we can't afford to, the state can't afford to educate our children. So they've already closed 40 schools in Oakland since 2002-2003. And yet they keep saying we're going to save money, but they never point out how no money was ever saved. There's always a need for new schools to be closed every year. Those are going to save money. The next ones we close, and the ones they want to close are all the schools in the poor kids in the flatlands, so the black and Latino kids. Parents have to walk 2.5-3 miles if they don't have cars to take their kids, or the kids are in the fourth grader, then have to walk 1.5 miles across busy streets to get to a school, and not have any schools in their own neighborhoods. This is, you know, and these schools, a lot of these schools are loved by the communities, and they fought for them. Anyway, So we went some significant advances around that, and those were fueled by community activists, but also the open teachers and their strike, and pretty much won the city as a whole, as opposed to school closings, which is sort of an amazing thing, despite the mass media saying that's a totally irrational position, that school closings are really good and they're going to save money, even though there's no evidence that they will save money. And another big victory, I think we just sort of ground them down. We stopped John Fisher from building what's called the Hayes Stadium, but it's really a $22 billion real estate development at Power Terminal, which would have effectively, in a period of time, undermined and destroyed the Port of Oakland, which is the economic engine of the East Bay and Northern California, and importantly is the center of ILWU, which is super important to Black community. And I think there's still actors for that. They're really angry. I mean, everybody supported the real estate deal, from Gavin Newsom, all the Democratic leaders. I don't know if I believe her. I think she may have been silent. I don't think she is. It was on our side, but she was silent. She did. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Well, there's people who say that, yes. Okay. So because of some of these advances, there's really the development money, all the money, hundreds of millions of dollars just went to private developers, private contractors, private consultants. I think they want it back. It started immediately, from day one. Pamela Price took office in the beginning of January, they immediately started the recall. So there's a crime wave, and it's all her fault. 2 weeks after she got into office, and it seems to be, to the extent there's a crime wave, part of it is that the Oakland police, I haven't been able to prove this yet, because nobody wants to talk about it, but it seems to be that the Oakland police have a worse slowdown. They're practicing work to rule. They do as little as they can. And that doesn't include actually going out and encouraging people to commit crimes. I don't know. But they don't, I found a complaint, grocers are saying they're robbed. Okay? They have some of the same people coming back every day and robbing their stores. And the police won't come out. They say, well, it's not a felony unless they steal at least $900, so it's not worth it for us to come out. I don't know, I've somebody coming out holding you up for the gun, it seems like it might be a felony and you might want to try to die. So there are issues. There are issues, but I think the point around the crime, at least from my point of view, is that people crime is a serious issue, but if the people who are using it don't really care about ending crime, they don't care about the real reasons, this is just an issue that they're using to take power and to get the progressives out. And then they'll just go on, and crime will be better because they won't talk about it anymore. I mean, the community will still be experiencing it. Anyway, and this goes back to the history. This is a traditional campaign of law and order, which has its roots going back to Reconstruction, and of course, famous Nixon Southern strategy, and drumming up racial fear and crime and social chaos. I just want to point out about the recall of Pamela Price. Am I looking it up? a recall campaign in Alameda County. I don't have the exact number, but it's about 100,000 signatures. And then you pay people to collect the signatures. And so it costs $11 a signature. And then you have to run a campaign, right? And it's not a campaign, I think, I'm not sure, $7 or $9 million for the San Francisco campaign to recall Jason Levine. But Alameda County is a lot bigger than San Francisco. So to run a campaign, talking about a lot of money, and there's already right-wing Republicans who are helping to agree to help fund this. So this is, and there's money pouring into community organizations. So if you're a community organization wants to help, so the media looks to several conservative community groups and say, well, these are the legitimate voices of, they decide who the legitimate voices of Oakland are. And I want to talk about somebody who is influential with the media, with the mainstream media, is Sam Singer. So I want to at least point out, so Sam Singer, I don't know if you know who he is, but he was first surfaced in Oakland recently with his supporting Ron Armstrong in his campaign not to be fired. But he's now daily, more than daily, every few hours on, by his name is Sam Singer Associates. He's on running a Twitter attack on calling for crime is rampant. No one, everyone hates Oakland. The crime is rampant. All the stores, all the restaurants are closing. It's terrifying, and no one will come to Oakland anymore. And we need to get rid of the DA, and we need to get rid of the mayor, and we need to get rid of all these progressive policies that are causing the crime, because we need to get tough. And he has a history. His history is that he has represented Chevron for decades, and in particular, he was one. Chevron calls him when there's Chevron or Richmond calls him when there's a fire or a spill, and they come in, and he comes in and says, "Oh, these are your neighbors who live right next to you, and they love Richmond just as much as you do, and this is not, and they don't want it, they want to handle this." So he puts his spin on it. He also defended the city of San Francisco when a tiger killed a kid a few years ago in the San Francisco Zoo, and vilified the kid as saying, well, he was drunk and high on weed, and he was taunting the tiger, so it was his own fault. And that was a successful campaign. There was a big battle where Chevron was lost several billion dollars to the indigenous people in the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador. He helped decimate the lawyer. What? His name was Don Zager. He was disbarred, was in prison, and now people are saying that he's sort of like Julian Assange. So it's finally his reputation has come back. Now Singer and Chevron have started a new attack on him, by the way, to destroy his reputation. So he's enormously influential with the mass media. He goes to them and, I don't know how he does it, but he goes to them and talks to them and says, this is the narrative, and then they repeat the narrative on Channel 2 and Channel 4 nightly, So we're up against serious, actually, a mass media attack. How many minutes are there? 3. Okay. Well, I'll sum up and I'll stand here. What? 2:40. Okay. Well, anyway, I think that we have a fairly progressive, conclusion, we have a fairly progressive community and elected fairly progressive leaders, or somewhat progressive leaders. But we need better organization. We need really advanced communication. The mass communication that we have, the alternative communication, has helped so far, but the impact is pretty serious, I think. And without any kind of strength in our alternative media, strength in our message, and strength in our ways of working together. Okay, that's it. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to do it. It's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was so educational. I just want to say the Peace and Freedom Party, and probably the Green Party, correct me if I'm wrong, did oppose the AIDS, right? You guys did too, right? Did you guys oppose the AIDS stadium or that real estate development and Howard Terminal? Yeah, we did. and we also opposed the recall of Pamela Price, so we need to get on it and do something, actually. So our next speaker is Ann Derrickson. She's a contributing editor to the Black Agenda Report, and she's also a contributor to the Gray Zone, Pacifica Radio, and other outlets. So let's hear it for Ann Garrison.
I should say first, I almost didn't come because yesterday I couldn't think straight in the heat. I was having trouble thinking of anything. I was having a little trouble thinking of anything to say in the first place, and in the heat, I was really thinking I couldn't think of anything to say. But it got better today, so I jotted down a few notes and decided to run down. I'm not a media scholar or a media studies scholar, so I'm not sure if there's anything I could tell you that you don't know about consolidation in the media. I did some web searching yesterday. I found the media monopoly has not been updated. Ben Bagdikian's book hasn't been updated since 2004. But there are various articles. In 2016, Forbes said that 15 billionaires own the media. The consensus now seems to be that there are 6 media corporations that own most everything. That includes news, film, TV, streaming services, drama, sports, news. Now, one thing I think that is important to note about this is we're talking about the English language media here, with the exception of Univision. I think there's more Spanish language media, but the big Spanish language media in this country is Univision, and that's also listened to in Latin America. But these huge conglomerates, their first motivation is, it's getting distorted. Okay, their first motivation is profit. The second is protecting oligarchic interests. And the latter will probably override the former as needed. Now, as to most of this being English language media, I think it's important to look not only at who owns the media and what it is, but also who the audience is. 1.35 billion of the world's 7.8 billion people speak English. There are 320 million French speakers, 595 million Spanish speakers, 1.3 or 4 billion Chinese speakers. That probably includes Indian languages because 1.4 billion people in the world would be 7.3 billion people in the world are Indian, 17% are Indian, 17% are Chinese. The global literacy rate is 87%. I pay a lot of attention to Africa, where it is 67%. 25% of the world engaged in subsistence farming. That's 65% of Africans. Last year I went to two places, Ethiopia and Eritrea, where the majority are subsistence farmers. And I found there that the first thing people buy is a cell phone. I had several notable experiences. I was in one of the most remote places in the world, a place called Afar, which is extremely hot desert. The population are nomadic pastoralists for the most part. And I was watching someone drive a donkey cart with, you think after all this time I would know how to use the microphone. This gentleman was driving a donkey cart down the road with jerry cans of water just over on the back of it. And I watched, and pretty soon he pulled the cell phone out of his pocket. Another time I was talking to a monk who had fled ethnic violence in one part of Ethiopia to another. He was trying to make it to another monastery. He was explaining how he was born to spend his days speaking to God, because that was not really a choice, that was what he was born to. And then he pulled a cell phone out of a smartphone out of his pocket, out of his robe, you know. I couldn't help laughing, you know, God called. But a lot of the world is getting their news on their cell phones. You know, you get on a bus, anyway, with the kids, they're all on their cell phones. This is true in the rest of the world as well. So that's just a little perspective that the media and media audience are not all in the West. When we're talking about the six media corporations owning the media, we're not talking about the Chinese media, which is 1.4 billion people. 1.35 billion people, as they said, speak English, 1.4 billion speak Chinese. I don't think we know much about Chinese media at all. I don't. Six corporations own most of the media. Their motivations are profit and protection of oligarchic interests. I think it's obvious that alternative media is needed to counter the dominant narrative. That's why I said I'm not going to tell you anything that you don't know here. The best thing I could do then is perhaps give some examples. Oh wait, there was one other thing before I go on to examples that I wanted to talk about. And that is the huge dominance of the internet companies. Google, Facebook, Twitter being, I think, the most obvious. And so many people get their news on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, I'm sure you've noticed that what somebody said on Twitter is news all the time. Read accounts and so-and-so said this on Twitter, so-and-so said that on Twitter, that's news. The internet and, the mediums like Twitter and Facebook are hugely and frighteningly powerful. But they've also made it possible for people like me to find an audience. Now, I have 76,000 Twitter followers, and my recording for Black Agenda Report and anybody else I write or produce for do not find the audience that it does if I can use Twitter and Facebook. So it's frightening, and the way they can switch you on and switch you off, and the government is trying to control them to switch people off and on as they have, as was revealed in the Twitter files. It's frightening, but it also has a democratizing, a big democratizing effect. I thought this might be my swan song. Yesterday I was thinking this little pot might actually be my swan song, because a couple of days ago, the Black Agenda Report website went down. It went down with that news click operation that was raided in India, that was that was the Black Virginia Report's web host. And we were sitting on the edge of our chairs trying to, you know, waiting to see if it was going to be possible to save it. Now, it turns out it is impossible to save all the archives and to start publishing again next week. I've got 9 years worth of archives on there. And for me, the other great thing about the internet is the historical record. It is so fast. You can find a historical record in no time at all. And I feel like in 9 years I've made my little contribution to that. People fish it up and they write to me about it, things that I wrote years ago. Or once in a while I see somebody referencing it. I had a website go down. I had a personal website where I posted a lot of material for years. It went down. I'm virtually certain that people wanted the government took it down. And I've never had the money to pay somebody to spend a lot of time trying to bring it back, and then I'd have to pay a lot to host it, whereas now I record mostly for Black and Gender Report and other sites. So I haven't attempted to bring it back. Possibly there's a volunteer who might help me out. But anyway, the point is, I mean, we could just be switched off like that next time. This is great democratization and all kinds of other possibilities. The ability to access historical memory in no time. But at the same time, the ability to just switch off just like that. They cancel your Twitter account, your Facebook account, or they just take your website down. And they're huge, you know, these corporations that dominate the internet are enormous. It's just a handful of them, you all know the names. Okay, now I'll just go into some examples of the ways in which I've been able to challenge dominant narratives. Most recently, I wrote a piece about an Amnesty International report, which was attacking Eritrea. Eritrea is a tiny country that I write a lot about. It's the Cuba of Africa. Very, very, very similar in many ways. And U.S. is so hates Eritrea that it's one of, I think it's 4 nations who are abolished from using the SWIFT system for conducting international financial transactions. Those are Eritrea, Iran, Russia, and North Korea. That's the most harsh sanction that could be imposed, is exclusion from the SWIFT system for conducting international financial transactions. So this Amnesty International attack was fiercely attacking Eritrea regarding the Ethiopian war. Yeah, the Ethiopian war took place for 2 years, from November 2020 to November 2022, and they were saying that Eritrean atrocities in Tigray are still going on. The point is that this Amnesty report was totally based on anonymous telephone testimony. Which is the case with a lot of Amnesty reports. It's highly politically agendized. And whenever Amnesty or Human Rights Watch publishes a report, it's instantly published all over the world. All the big major media outlets, The Guardian, The New York Times, the BBC, so they all publish Amnesty and Human Rights Watch reports. So that's huge influence. I was able to challenge that with the piece that I wrote for the Grady Center. Ultimately, something called the ICHRED, the International Commission for Human Rights Investigation of Ethiopia and Eritrea, the war that took place. It's something that was created by the UN Human Rights Council to investigate war crimes and atrocities in Ethiopia during the 2-year war and thereafter. It was shut down at the Human Rights Council. And Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch were both demanding that it be continued. I can't say that I had anything to do with that. I think it was probably that the European Union had decided that it wanted to reestablish good relations with Ethiopia so we could shut the thing down. But the gray zone has also done work to challenge the standards in Human Rights Watch reports that are based on anonymous witness testimony so much of the time and are highly politically agendized. And I say that I had a conversation with Norman Finkelstein about this once, and he said these organizations have so much power that if they get something right, you should go ahead and praise them. and you should share them when they don't. I still have trouble doing that. If they get something right, it's hard for me to say, hey, they got something right this time, because I feel like when I do that, it's giving them credibility. That they might carry into their next assault against some country like Cuba or Venezuela or Eritrea. But that's what he said. And he said that at the time that Human Rights Watch suddenly took a 180 degree turn on Palestine. And it was very interesting why he said that happened because of Black Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter Alliance with the Palestinian people, and also because Trump was so fanatically pro-Israel that turned the Welcome Jewish Donor Base of Human Rights Watch around. And they published a report, on apartheid Israel. And I think that's not, main issue for me, but I think that has been sustained. Now, another thing that I reported on recently was attacks here. I'm going to go back to Eritrea again. Eritrea, like a lot of other countries, has these cultural festivals in the West where people celebrate their culture, speak their language, sustain a diaspora community and a connection to the home country. Well, there were these terrible attacks. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I was at one. I was in Seattle when I walked out the door of a hotel, and there was an ambulance there, and people were being taken away in the ambulance because they've been attacked by these thugs. Well, now that I should go attempt to explain too much about who they were, I'll just say, okay, they were Tigrayan members of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which started this war that I was talking about, and there were probably some dissident Eritreans. But the point is that the press all said, this is about Isaias Afwerki, the president of Eritrea, being a dictator, and so on and so forth. These were peaceful, law-abiding citizens of the West, exercising their free speech and free assembly rights. And they were attacked by these thugs. And instead of focusing on that, the press all focused on this Isaias Afwerki as a dictator story, as though that justified it. And this was just across the board in the European and U.S. press. Actually, the U.S. press was an exception. There was only one festival here, the one I was at in Seattle, and they pretty much ignored it. But there were attacks in three or four places in Canada and across Europe. One of the worst was in Norway, where 192 people were injured, many of them seriously. And so I was the only one who reported. Basically, these were attacks on peaceful, law-abiding citizens of the West, if that's what you want to assert. In 2022, I went to Ethiopia and they said all the reporting then was about the war and atrocities in one province, Tigray region, which is the one that the U.S. had chosen as where they get them. Okay, I went to Amhara and Afar, two other regions, one of which I said was where I saw the gentleman take his cell phone out of his pocket while he was driving donkey cart, and reported on the TTLF attacks there. So those were the unworthy victims in that conflict. That was what I was able to do. Somalia election, I was able to report something nobody reported, which is that while the U.S. tries to cram so-called democracy down the throats of the rest of the world, the Somalia had actually suppressed a one-person, one-vote election. Rwanda has challenged the dominant narrative, which is almost unassailable, which is enshrined in the Wikipedia, and if we had more time, I'd say something about the Wikipedia, maybe we can talk about it in the question. But there's a version, a Wikipedia version, and a boilerplate version that any paper rips off when they want to publish something about Rwanda. That's not true. There were two genocides, there was a Tutsi genocide, and a Hutu genocide. I'll just stop there. We're out of time.
Almost out of time. Okay. So before we open, get ready with your questions. Before that, Dan, are you with me? Dan has a special message for you. Not that special. No, he's going to tell you to get your wallet out. Even though this is free.
KPFA is having KPFA is having an election for the board of directors. We have several board of directors here now: Frank Sterling, James McFadden, and Daniel Borscom. About 2,000 people of, unfortunately, only about 2,000 of 11,000 some members voted, but it does have an impact. KPFA has been on the air since 1947, I believe. I think it's the longest listening range of any station in the country, or very close to it, from Santa Rosa in the north to Monterey in the south. And I won't say it's the voice of the left, that sounds a little pompous, but, I'm sorry. But, is that better now? Okay. All right, can you hear me now? All right. All right, anyway, Tuesday we'll have the vaccine calls. I'm part of a site called Rescue Pacifica, and the three brothers here are also part of that grouping too. Anyway, on a different note, the Peace and Freedom Party and the Green Party were both running candidates in 2024. While we each have 100,000 some registrants in California, we're still very small, underprivileged party with limited resources. There's no charge for this at all, but we'd like to pass the referral hat. So if you'd like to contribute anything to help keep these events going on and also for our campaign fund next year, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
So actually, we have an additional reason to ask for your funding. We used to do these on Zoom simultaneously, and we were trying to also make a true hybrid so that people could actually have a screen and all that, and we were halfway through that. We have to raise some money to make that happen. So that would actually help make these forums better and more accessible. It would help us to get speakers who can't come to the plaza, who may be in different states or different parts of California or different countries, to actually be speakers at the forums. So so we hope you can help us with that. So now it's your turn to ask questions and make statements. We're limited to 3 minutes. We're kind of a little behind time because we started a little late. So I want to see how many people have questions or comments. Not a whole lot. Okay, and I know Taylor, I don't see you, but I think you're... Okay, so I want to start with Norma, then Taylor, then Bill.
Can everybody hear me? Putin has been declared a victory. How did that happen? You all know that is the period of the system creating our politics. It's not true. First of all, they have a democracy in front of them. Thank you.
Have some sort of impact in the world out there. I go mostly out of TPFA. They reach a good portion of California. I'm on Friday nights at 7, so I don't know a lot of people are listening on Friday nights, but we do get a lot of, we do get some response, and sharing archive shows of stuff that you heard that's important, I think, is important for independent media, alternative media, is that you do your best to share it around with folks so they actually have a chance to hear it, and you discuss alternative media when you're in conversations with folks that talk about stories they hear from the mainstream, that you can guide them. I think that's very important. And then on the Russia-Ukraine topic, I think it was very important at for independent media, for me, to be able to gather some of the information that you spoke of, what happened in Donbass and all the other places where there was other killings, and what happened with NATO and close and around that. I think we didn't get a lot of that in the mainstream press, so the alternative press was there for me to research and build my own ideas instead of having it forced on me from what we're kind of like. I mean, you can't really avoid it most times, so you just have to take it and search out alternative resources. And then we get a close at the end. I'll save my own conclusion.
I do want to ask that people respect the speakers, and if we need an announcement about talking about petitions, we will have time for that later. So I just feel like people just need to time up. Please. No, you're not listening to me, but that's okay. All right, next is Anne.
I jotted down two things that people wanted to talk about. One was Ukraine, one was labor struggles. Was there something else? Okay. Yeah, I know that Ukraine and NATO started the war. I know that Ukraine was bombing the Russian-speaking population in the east of Ukraine. I know that that was a violation of the Minsk Accord. I know that NATO has been encroaching on Russia's borders since World War II, and instead of but I don't, I think my main source for that has been the Gray Zone, which I also write for. Trying to think of another. There are others, but yeah, I know that, and that's one place where I think the sovereign media narrative is overwhelming. You really have to look alternative media. Some things like Black Lives Matter and labor struggles, you get some media reporting in the U.S. press, but with Ukraine, it's totally overwhelming. You have to look alternative media. Regarding labor struggles, as Frank said, there was a labor show on KPFA, and I think it's just terrible that he's no longer there. He felt really kind of challenging, but nobody else does what he does, and I work on hour-long Pacific show of 1 week an hour. It doesn't air on KPFA. It airs on all the other main stations, and he covers labor struggles there constantly. I wrote a piece about LaFonza Butler, the new senator, Gavin Newsom's appointee for to take Dianne Feinstein's place. And as I noted, she has a checkered labor history. She was the president of the SEIU, one of the long-term home care workers, which is 400,000 members, and then she became, I believe, president of the larger SEIU, statewide SEIU council, something like that. Then she went to work for a consulting firm, and she helped Uber and Lyft and the like pass Proposition 27, Instacart, DoorDash, all the people who employ gig workers, helped pass Proposition 22, advised them on how to pass Proposition 22, which overrode Assembly Bill, can't remember the number, but it's Assembly Bill, which
So you could, Ken or Frank, if you could talk about the role of alternative media, open post, in their case, Ken, and Frank, if you could talk about the right thing in terms of media that you experienced firsthand. Thank you.
So there's two things that I'm wondering about, and I think that would be helpful. I have a lot of time on my hands, so I can go to 10 different websites every day and read a bunch of articles, you know, on each of those websites. I can go to Alabama, I can go to Recording News, I can go to Grayzone, I can go to a variety of different websites, you know, Corporate Action, I think just and the Wall Street and Bridge, there's a lot of, you know, David Kaplan, there's a lot of stuff there. Not all the articles that you can find there are particularly great, but a lot of them are really good, you know, so you're kind of trying to sort through which ones are going to appeal to you. And for most people, especially in field, I don't think they have the time that I do because I'm semi-retired to be able to do that kind of effort. And it would be really great if there was something in the community that would have that kind of like sort of consensus of here's the five articles you ought to be reading today. Something that would really kind of narrow it down. And maybe it's the five articles that are local, and then the five articles that are international or something, but something that would really kind of help, you know, if we have a lot of older people to do that. The second thing is there's so much crap out there that really needs to be debunked. And you can find those debunking articles, you know, like Grayzone, or you can find that guy, you might do Flutterack, or Aaron Lache might write about this. But there's a lot of other stuff that doesn't get, and so it seems to me having people debunk those articles, and so also having, here's what the New York Times put today, and it's crap, and it's crap for this reason, so having kind of brief summaries of the stuff that's propaganda out there and why this stuff is wrong would be a really useful tool, you know, to keep people informed. I mean, we have to both go after the stuff that's fake news, the stuff that's propaganda, and expose it for what it is, you know, in whatever way, you know, it can't be through, you know, an article that's exposed. That, and have this kind of nest of articles that here, you know, if you don't have that much time, here's what you should really hear those good stories that really should be aware of now. I wonder if you can comment on that and try to, I don't know, in fact, in something like the Bay Area, we ought to be able to find, you know, a lot of people that could not pitch in on something like that. It would be a huge effort. Thank you.
I'm okay, and so much
for
the instant. So, I think we're ready, so I'm going to ask the panelists to do something a little difficult, which is incorporate, try to answer the questions in your 5-minute wrap, as part of your 5-minute wrap up. And so let's see, we went back. We go that reverse direction and we will start with Anne.
James, that's a great idea. I don't know if I have too much else to say about it. I think maybe that's something you could start to organize yourself. There are a few things. Well, no, I can't think of anything. I actually can't think of anything quite like that. I was going to say the show that Katie Halper and Mary Mendez do, but that's a summary of what not to watch. They do a Monday morning wrap of the weekend news stories, like, we're going to tell you about the things you don't have to watch it. I can't think of anybody who tries to do the kind of wrap up that you're talking about. I can't think of one that's broken down into like national, international, local. I can't think of anything like that. I listen to Grayzone podcasts, but that's usually about national and international news. My closing remarks. I think I've said everything I have to say. Well, thank you. Okay, so now we're going to try and go.
Okay, hey. Yeah, thank you, Stan. The dark side of alternative media in Antioch is the Antioch Herald, and what is now called Contra Costa News, which is formerly East County Times. They changed their name. And they've been called out in the city council for their homophobic, their racist actions, and they're not control of their comment section on their social media, where the back the blue crew, as we call them, and have to support the police, regardless of the killings, the racism, to spread their hate and comments on their pages. And actually, there's controversy in Antioch about one of them, which is now Contra Costa News, because they were awarded a bunch of money from the school board to write positive stories about Antioch. It was like a $75,000 grant, and what they did was they lead the recall campaigns in Antioch against our black and progressive elected officials. So all those thousands of dollars that you talked about, the recall for Pamela Price and then Jake Levine, they do that in Antioch as well, and they use their alternative media, which they have a very big following, way bigger than mine, and they spread their news. So I think there is a dark side. You got to be able to, like Stan said, be able to counter, right? Or maybe it was James, but someone has to be able to counter some of those. And I think one great show that did that was Counter Spin, that was on KBFA sometimes. I think it still is on some days now. That they would do exactly that. They would read the headlines, say what the local, they would say what the mainstream press says and give you a counter to that. And then James, I agree with what Ann said, great idea, maybe you could try that. Gathering stories like that, because I think that's what alternative media is the people that kind of take it upon themselves to do these kinds of things. One thing I do is watch and listen to the headlines, like the Rockies Now headlines, other headlines, and then I see if I want to tap in deeper to other things. And then lastly, I would just wrap up my my time by saying, again, to check out First Voice Media and Reimagine Antioch on Facebook. We got two big events coming up. One is going to be Saturday, October 21st, we're going to be at the Antioch Police Department protesting the racist, hateful, violent Antioch Police Officers Association. And we're going to call on the two city council people that took endorsements and money from the APOA to denounce the racist, hateful organization that they've been outed as through their own writing, through their own words, their text messages. And also any financial contributions that they had to their election, we want them refunded to the city, not to the Police Officers Association. So we're going to demand that the two people that took the money from them return it to the city, to organizations that are working to heal from these racist, hateful attacks by the Antioch Police, and or organizations that are going to be alternatives to community safety, such as the Angelo Pinto crisis response team, that is a non-police response to low-level 911 calls for service. Also the Mayor's Apprenticeship Program, which takes folks off the streets that are involved in the criminal justice system repeatedly and gives them a training. We're trying to expand it to East Bay Regional Park and other places that would need jobs. So again, October 21st, we're going to gather at noon at the Antioch Police Department, 301 L Street in downtown Antioch, and we're going to denounce the hateful, racist, violent Antioch Police Officers Association. And then real quick, another action that's going to happen is more of a personal one for me. I don't want to go into the whole story because that's not what this day is about. But some of you all remember a young man that was lynched at the Concord Bart Station in 1985. Timothy Charles Lee. Well, that was my cousin, Timmy, and the racist, hateful police at the time did a half-assed investigation and ruled his lynching a suicide. And that was 37 years ago, and we're trying to get Timmy's case reopened and his murder deemed homicide.
And so we can start going after these people who may be in their 60s or 70s who killed this man, my cousin, Timothy Charles Lee. So we're going to be gathering on the day that he was killed, which is All Souls Day, Day of the Dead, November 2nd. And we're going to gather at the Rainbow Community Center in Concord at the LGBTQIA+ Community Center. We're going to gather there at 3 o'clock and hang out for a minute. We're going to march down to the BART station at 4 o'clock where we'll have the second annual Candlelight Vigil and March for my cousin Timothy Charles Lee. So again, that's November 2nd rally up at the Rainbow Community Center at 3 p.m. with a march to the Concord BART station and the vacant lot where he was found hanging in a tree. So that's again November 2nd. And then and after, I would say keep spreading you know, all your alternative media to your friends and family and try to counter folks that breathe the mainstream narrative to an alternative source. So you don't have to hit them in the head with it, but just say, hey, take a look at this. So if there's something that you feel is not being properly represented, you can guide them to a source that will give them another side of the story, or even more of the story. Thank you again, First Voice Media, apfaapprentice.org, and thank you for listening to us.
Thank you for inviting me, and it's a real see our post three things online at www.postnewsgroup.com. So it's printed online and it's available in libraries and other places. If you can contact me, I'll find out. If you have a newspaper in the Houston, case study 411-ASEIN411@gmail.com. Started by people in struggle in the 70s, and it was started by a lot of people just in around the city, and people like John George, and people, members of the Black Panther Party started it, and now it's really distributed there, and they're trying to make a lot of money. And the management company. You know, they're having problems with electricity and rodents and roaches and all that stuff, and they complain nothing happens. And so I believe that I'm calling the organs and reporting about it in the paper, and but also meeting with them and helping them.
I have to throw out one last website. For those that are interested in following my cousin's case, the case of Timothy Charles Lee, we created a Facebook page for him. It's called Reopen the Case of Timothy Charles Lee. And we recently started posting articles that we got out of a special collection library in Stamford that a man named Bill Callison stored at the library in Stamford, including a 1977 article that we just posted, and that was the Alameda and Contra Costa County KKK were interviewed by someone from, I think it was the Chronicle or the one of the local dailies that Stan was talking about, interviewed four Klansmen in their hoods and roads. Three of them were police officers in Alameda and Contra Costa County, and the subject of the interview was they were recruiting in Concord and the surrounding area for police and other folks to join their clavern. So we just posted that article. You got to click on it, kind of zoom out. He's from the late 80s. That will contain the special collection from the library. So yes, reopen the case of Timothy Charles Lee and scroll down through some of the articles that we're posting and we're gearing up for the walk November 2nd. And you can read about the Klan in 1977 actively recruiting police officers in Concord when 7 years later my cousin would be lynched in Concord and the police ruled it a suicide. So yeah, check out the Reopen the Case of Timothy Charles Lee on Facebook. Thank you. Sorry for jumping back in.
No, thank you.
Quick announcement about the open school board election.
Yeah, go ahead. We are going to have announcements.
I guess we're doing announcements now.
Yeah, we can do announcements now. It's about time.
So there's an election in Loveland for the Oakland School Board. The special election, it's a little complicated. Anyway, but it starts on Monday, and it goes on until the first Tuesday of November. So you can start voting on Monday. And right now it's really important because the Oakland School Board is split between three progressives and three conservatives. And so this race determines the direction of the Oakland School Board. So the progressive candidate is Sasha Christy Hernandez. She's been endorsed by the Oakland teachers, by SEIU, by the Green Party, and many other big groups. So please do everything you can to support Sasha Christy Hernandez. Website address is Sasha4Oakland, the number 4, Sasha4Oakland.com. It's a critical election. It'll determine the whole state and the rest of the Oakland School Board. Thanks.
So, Greg, are those district elections?
It's a district election, but so anybody can help.
Everybody. Wait, yeah, anyone can help, or what is the district?
District 5, East Oakland.
Okay.
District 5.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's good to know. So, I'm going to do a little segue from what Frank said. Bill Callison, who's in this reference, Texas Archives guy about 15 years ago, and he was a Peace and Freedom Party legislative front of Obama State and County Central Committee and helped organize in Contra County for Peace and Freedom Party. So that's a segue into the fact that I don't know the Green Party, but they're probably also elected to their county. They're probably also doing their county council petition if you're in the Green Party, so probably ask Greg about that. We have our associated election system by supervisorial district, and Norma and I and Sam are all candidates for the Peace and Freedom Party Central Committee in the 6th supervisorial district. If anyone asks you to sign the petition, there's going to be a contested election in our district, and you can also sign for free. And Norma and I both have our petition today. Sam will have it soon, right? Soon, probably. Okay, so if anyone's here, I think we're probably going to three. Do you have an announcement here?
Ted mentioned the action committee, and I think it's not especially hardly in the mic important. Hold on, let me give you a mic.
Yeah.
Can't hear you.
He's not going to use it.
I'll use it.
Okay.
Anyway.
Even in what some consider, you know, very progressive media territory, it's just gangs, that are breaking wild. Anyway, Luther Larrasee, the wife of President Larrasee, will be in town 2 weeks from today. And I unfortunately don't have a seat yet, but if you go to the Haiti Action Committee, they'll have information on that for the Haiti Emergency Team 1. So come out and you know, try to help us. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah,
bring it over to James.
I do. Green Sunday tomorrow is Carlos Garrido, who's going to be talking about urine fetish. And Kirby Fetish is basically on the left, and he's going to talk about, it's more than just all the left, more than just the Marxist left, all the left, where we tend to bicker and fight amongst ourselves because we don't all believe exactly the same thing, and we think we all have the answers. And this fetish about purity, where you're not going to support somebody who's socialist, but not socialist and not like your socialism, or your, or has something, some trait you don't want, is what divides the left. And we really must overcome that, where we're going to really attack our real opponents, which is the capitalists and the think tanks and the neocons and the neoliberals around there. So please come to Green Sunday at 5 o'clock tomorrow. You can find information on the Green Party and Zoom meeting. And it should be good talk, and there'll be a series of questions and stuff.
Okay, great.
And
are you pronouncing it again? I am announcing and notice the people to know we are living in the great step of us being educators.
Okay, following up on what Bill was saying, the Mildred Aristide event is Saturday, October 21st, 3 to 5 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, 27th Broadway.
So I want to thank everyone for participating in this Studs, Max, and Social Forum.
street forums take place usually on the first Saturday of most months. We do take breaks and sometimes pick a holiday or something to do it on the second Saturday. The next forum is, I think it's November 4th. If someone has a calendar, I can take it. The next Saturday. The next forum will be on November 4th. And it will be co-hosted by the Oscar Grant Committee Against Police Violence and Police Brutality and State Violence. So you can imagine what the subject will be. You can get forum announcements by signing up on that newspaper on the little table over there, the sign-up sheet. Also, you can email us at info@submassocialism.org, and those SEs really need to know all those words. And again, I want to thank you all for coming. See you next time, I hope.
Okay, my turn. If you'll stay here for two sentences. We are all educators. We start learning in the womb, and all our lives we are learning. It has been stolen from us. Learning has become part of a commodity called education. And yet, here we are all experiencing, for better or for worse, understanding and information and commentary all our lives. Don't let them take it from you.
I have voter registration forms for anyone who wants to change their registration out of that test.